Vegan. Etan vegan yogi shahita dhira sarvam abhimam pitivim sashishyad. The sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So now, Prabhupada describes the demands of the body. Similarly, the demands of the body can be divided into three categories: the demands of the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. One may observe that these three senses are physically situated in a straight line, as far as the body is concerned, and is that the bodily demands begin with the tongue. If one can restrain the demands of the tongue by limiting its activities to the eating of prasad, the urges of the belly and the genitals can automatically be controlled. In this connection, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Sharira avidya jao, jahendriya taikao, jivefele vishaya sagare, taramadye jivayati, lovamoya sudurmati, takijeta katina sangsare. Krishna varadoyamoy, koribara jikvajoy, swapashad anadilobhai, se anamrita kao, radha krishna gunagao, premidako chitani nitai. O Lord, this material body is a lump of ignorance, and the senses are a network of paths leading to death. Somehow or other, we have fallen into the ocean of material sense enjoyment. And of all the senses, the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable. It is very difficult to conquer the tongue in this world. But you, dear Krishna, are very kind to us. You have sent this nice prasad to help us conquer the tongue. Therefore, let us take this prasad to our full satisfaction and glorify your lordship, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, and in love, call out for the help of Chaitanya and Prabhu Nityananda. There are six kinds of rasas, tastes, and if one is agitated by any one of them, the person becomes controlled by the urges of the tongue. Some persons are attracted to the eating of meat, fish, crabs, eggs, and other things produced by semina and blood and eaten in the form of dead bodies. Others are attracted to eating vegetables, creepers, spinach, or milk products, but all for the satisfaction of the tongue's demands. Such eating for sense gratification, including the use of extra quantities of spices like chili and tamarind, is to be given up by Krishna-conscious persons. The use of pan, haritaki, betel nuts, various spices used in pan making, tobacco, LSD, marijuana, opium, liquor, coffee, and tea, is indulged in to fulfill illicit demands. If we can practice accepting only remnants of food offered to Krishna, it is possible to get free from Maya's victimization. Vegetables, grains, fruits, milk products, and water are proper foods to offer to the Lord, as Lord Krishna himself prescribes. However, if one accepts prasad only because of its palatable taste, and thus eats too much, he also falls prey to trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us to avoid very palatable dishes even while eating prasad. If we offer palatable dishes to the deity with the intention of eating such nice food, we are involved in trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue. If we accept the invitations of a rich man with the idea of receiving palatable food, we are also trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anjali 6.227, it is stated, Jivara lalase je iti uti doi. Shishno dara parayana Krishna nahipai. That person who runs here and there seeking to gratify his palate and who is always attached to the desires of his stomach and genitals is unable to attain Krishna. As stated before, the tongue, belly, and genitals are all situated in a straight line. They fall in the same category. Lord Chaitanya has said, Balo na kaibe ar balo na paribe. Do not dress luxuriously and do not eat delicious foodstuffs. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anjali 6.236. Those who suffer from diseases of the stomach must be unable to control the urges of the belly, at least according to this analysis. When we desire to eat more than necessary, we automatically create many inconveniences in life. However, if we observe fasting days like Ekadasi and Janmashtami, we can restrain the demands of the belly. As far as urges of the genitals are concerned, there are two, proper and improper, or legal and illicit sex. When a man is properly mature, he can marry according to the rules and regulations of the Shastras and use his genitals for begetting nice children. This is legal and religious. Otherwise, he may adopt many artificial means to satisfy the demands of the genitals, and he may not use any restraint. When one indulges in illicit sex life as defined by the Shastras, either by thinking, planning, talking about, or actively having sexual intercourse, or by satisfying the genitals by artificial means, he is caught in the clutches of Maya. These instructions apply not only to householders, but also to Tyagis, or those who are in the renounced order of life. In his book, Pranavivarta, chapter 7, Sri Jagannanda Pandit says, Vairagi bhai gramya katana shunive kane, gramya vartana kahive javi milive ane, swapna ona karabhai sri sambhasana, grihe sri chariya bhai asiyache vana, jari chahe prana. Pranaya Rakibe Gorangera Sane Chotahari Dasera Kata Take Jaina Mane Balona Kaibe or Balona Paribe Hridayete Radha Krishna Saravada Sevibe. My dear brother, you are in the renounced order of life and should not listen to the talk about ordinary worldly things, nor should you talk about worldly things when you meet with others. Do not think of women even in dreams. You have accepted the renounced order of life with a vow that forbids you to associate with women. If you wish to associate with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you must always remember the incident of Choto Haridas and how he was rejected by the Lord. Do not eat luxurious dishes or dress in fine garments, but always remain humble and serve their lordships, Shishi Radha and Krishna, in your heart of hearts. The conclusion is that one who can control these six items, speech, mind, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals, is to be called a Swami or Goswami. Swami means master, and Goswami means master of the go or senses. When one accepts the renounced order of life, he automatically assumes the title of Swami. This does not mean that he is the master of his family, community, or society. He must be master of his senses. Unless one is master of the senses, he should not be called Goswami, but Godasa, servant of the senses. Following in the footsteps of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, all Swamis and Goswamis should fully engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As opposed to this, the Godasas engage in the service of the senses or in the service of the material world. They have no other engagement. Prahlad Maharaj has further described the Godasa, or Adanta Go, which refers to one whose senses are not controlled. An Adanta Go cannot become a servant of Krishna. In Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.30, Prahlad Maharaj has said, Matir na Krishne parata svato va mito bipadyeta griha vartanam Adanta Go bir vishantam tamisram puna. For those who have decided to continue their existence in this material world for the gratification of their senses, there is no chance of becoming Krishna conscious, not by personal endeavor, by instruction from others, or by joint conferences. They are dragged by the unbridled senses into the darkest region of ignorance, and thus they madly engage in what is called chewing the chewed. So then here, technically, then, they have described the demands of the tongue. So if we're just eating because it is palatable, or, you know, especially if we're not offering things to Krishna, but even if we're offering things to Krishna, purely our motive behind cooking nice food stuff is not to please Krishna, but to please our senses, then this can be an obstacle. So this should be avoided. The whole idea is that when we should cook with the idea to please Krishna, that we cook our best because he will be pleased. So that is the principle that we try for. And then we see here is that there's so many things that one can eat, so some people are attracted to things in the mode of ignorance, mode of passion, or mode of goodness. So ignorance and passion, those things are dropped. And then those things in the mode of goodness, those are offered to Krishna. So probably even mentions here, too much chili and tamarind also, because then that is passion. You know, if there's too much spicing, then where it creates a rajasic effect, and that's not so good. You know, because the idea is to create something pleasant, something palatable, pleasant. And so that is offered to Krishna. Then, and then here is if we eat too much, because it is very nice, or we eat too much, then there is a disturbance to the stomach. And if the stomach is disturbed, then that will then put pressure on the genitals. So then that will create lust. So therefore, the devotee will avoid that. So therefore, this verse about Jivara Lase Ye Iti Uta Dhaya Krishna Dara Parayana Krishna Nahipaya. So those who are very much interested in gratifying the palate and who are always attached to the desires of the stomach and genitals, the Shishnodaras, then this will make it very difficult to get Krishna. There's even a prayer, I'm not sure, I think it's in the Rig Veda, where when Indra is going out to fight the demons, then he is getting blessings from, you know, from the Brahmins before going out, that may he not be overcome by the Shishnodaras, or the Shishnadevas, those who are attached to sense gratification in the form of, you know, overeating and sex, so that he will not be defeated by these Shishnadevas. So they're giving. So this is. In all spheres of Vedic life is something that is carefully watched out for. So then here it is pointed out, because with these distractions, then one will not take Krishna as the most important one. We'll take these other things as more important. Then Prabhupada points out that if one overeats, that will create difficulties in the stomach. If one doesn't overeat, then the stomach will stay in order. So definition of overeating means what you can't digest. So therefore he said, even if it's one chapati, if you can't digest it, then eating one chapati is overeating. You know? So overeating depends on the individual. It's what you can digest. So if you are working hard, your health is good, you eat, you know, and there's no problem, that's one thing. But if you eat and it creates problems, then that means one should be very careful about eating. So then, these days that we observe fast, and those are designed so that, one, we can focus our mind on the Supreme Lord and engage in more activities without having to be distracted by our daily, you know, activities that we may do in eating and sleeping and all these things. At the same time, it also teaches us that we can survive without, you know, eating, you know, like that. If we don't eat in a day, we'll live, we won't die. So therefore then it changes our priorities, that we may put the needs of the stomach as so important, when actually that they're important in so that we can engage properly in Krishna's service. We make a proper balance in this way. Like that. Then Prabhupada talks about licit and illicit sex. So proper or improper. So he says legal is for the someone who is mature and he gets married, and a woman who is fertile, then they produce Krishna conscious children. It says here for begetting nice children. So this is legal and religious. He says otherwise he may adopt many artificial means to satisfy. So that means this is legal. Everything else is artificial. Because the genitals should produce a child, like we see Lord Shiva. Then I don't know if we've gotten to that. Yeah, we got to that. So chasing Mohini Murti, then he has semen. So then it says his semen is never goes in vain. Right? So we see these great sages. His semen then it created gold and silver. All these other great sages, when they involuntarily pass semen, they created a child. Like that. It always created a child. You know, Dronacharya was born in a pot. You know, and Kripa and Kripi were born from clumps of grass because their father had involuntarily passed semen. And so it never went in vain. So that is the position. Semen must produce children. So there's no such thing as using it for sense gratification. It's a foreign thing in the Vedic conception. It just doesn't make sense. It's just like a family gets together and has dinner, right? So are they getting together to have dinner because of the taste and that's it? Or they're getting together because that is how the family can be united and spend time together. You know, and as a side thing, then the food tastes nice. So in the same way, husband and wife want to produce a child. The purpose is that husband and wife are cooperating together to create this child. So then that is a relationship between them. The pleasure of sex life is not in any way the purpose. So in the modern society that has become the prominent purpose, we can understand, is not proper. It's a strange outlook. It's not a correct outlook. Just because everybody has that outlook doesn't make it right. But it's a strange outlook, because other things we do not for that. Senses naturally go along. You have a body, it's made out of senses. So if you do anything with the body, the senses will be included. But what is your motive behind it? You know, so if that's the only motive, then what is the meaning? And the boy's only interested in pleasing his senses by touching the girl, or the girl by being touched by the boy, then what has that got to do with the person? Right? What has it got to do with the person? It has nothing to do with the person. So that we can say, because we identify with the body, therefore we say it's okay. But for those who are more elevated personalities, they don't think like that. You know, for them, that you're marrying a person. You're not marrying, you know, a pretty face and a pair of breasts. You're marrying a person. You know. So that's the thing. Is what is the purpose behind? So we can see is sex does not mean sense gratification. Sex means children. Just like eating means family relationships and nourishing the body. That's the definition. Along with it, the food will taste nice and the sex will be pleasurable. So therefore, but that is not the purpose. But in this age, there's a desire for sense gratification. That's all. Therefore, we have what you call junk food, right? Everybody knows it's useless as far as nourishment goes, but they eat it because it's just for taste. That's all. And whether you're hungry or not doesn't matter because of the taste. Therefore, you like tasting it. You like eating it. You know, so that's the interesting thing, is that it's been geared simply for sense gratification. That's the whole propaganda. You know, everything's been geared just for that. They advertise it, they propagate it, you know, they make movies about it, they make talk shows. It's all like this. It's just propaganda. So therefore we can understand that all these things of eating what we shouldn't be eating, or when we shouldn't be eating, or quantities we shouldn't eat, you know, trying to fulfill sexual appetite, not for the purpose of producing children, that all these things are not, or you know, speaking, not for the purpose of Krishna consciousness, just speaking just to speak nonsense, or thinking about all kinds of nonsense, or getting angry because we didn't get our nonsense. So these things are to be avoided. These things are not proper. So this then is called Goswami, or master of the senses. That is considered good. We just not get the echo a little bit. So that is then what is valuable. Then it is good. So such a person then they are actually properly situated in Krishna consciousness. Because of that, then they can help others. So this is the position. One should then, all devotees should become Goswami. It's not just only certain persons, all persons should become Goswami. Because they should try to be controlling the senses. Because, you know, otherwise in here, because here, he's saying controlling the senses, what's legal, that's control. Illegal, that's not. Legal means religious, illegal means irreligious. So he's not talking about Goswami only, meaning sannyasi. That has been put in here also is the position the sannyasi should understand also. But at the same time, is control of the senses doesn't just mean like that. So therefore, this means all devotees should endeavor to come to this standard. Because this is the first verse. Then from here, then the other things become more powerful. Then the other activities after this that Rupa Goswami mentions on what's unfavorable, what's favorable, all these things. So this is the foundation. So the devotee learns to engage his body, his mind, his words in the Lord's service. Any questions on this? Okay. So then the next text, Atyahara prayashascha prajalpo niyamadraha janasangascha lalyamcha sadbhir bhaktir vinashyati. One's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities. 1. Eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. 2. Over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. 3. Talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. 4. Practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement. Or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. 5. Associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. And 6. Being greedy for mundane achievements. Purport. Human life is meant for plain living and high thinking. Since all conditioned living entities are under the control of the Lord's third energy, this material world is designed so that one is obliged to work. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has three primary energies or potencies. The first is called Antaranga Shakti, or the internal potency. The second is called Tathastha Shakti, or the marginal potency. The third is called Bahiranga Shakti, or the external potency. The living entities constitute the marginal potency, and they are situated between the internal and external potencies. Being subordinate as eternal servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the jivatmas, or atomic living entities, must remain under the control of either the internal or external potency. When they are under the control of the internal potency, they display their natural constitutional activity, namely constant engagement in the devotional service of the Lord. This is stated in Bhagavad Gita 9.13. Mahatmanas tumam partha daivim prakritim asrita bhajantyananya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam. O son of Pita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Okay, so then the living entity, the jiva, then is in between these two potencies. So this is, if we understand this, then it makes things very clear. Is that the internal potency will always be engaged in the Lord's service. And the internal potency is the place of activities where the Lord performs his pastimes. So interaction with the Lord, interaction with the Lord's devotees, then is based on this principle of the internal potency. And the external potency then is where the Lord's maya is displayed, where we see that the external potency is performing is dead matter, but the Lord entering it creates an illusion that something is going on, like in the spiritual world. And then the living entity then engages in things of this world. But we see the living entity doesn't have a choice to not be in one or the other. Is by their makeup, they must interface with people, they must interact with people, they must be involved with people. So because of this, then they must be in one or the other of the two worlds. It means in the spiritual world, the people will be engaged in transcendental activities. And in the material world, then they must work. They're obliged to work. Because in the spiritual world, there is rasa. There's a natural relationship with the Lord. Based on that relationship, you will perform activities. So you will be engaged. But in the material world, we don't have a natural nature here because it's unnatural for us. So depending upon our current position, we'll have attracted a particular gross and subtle body that is supposed to do a particular work. That's why to work is considered proper. And to not work is considered improper. But we have to understand what is that definition of work. So then one must work according to one's conditioned nature. So now we can either engage that in sinful activities, pious activities, or in devotional activities. So now, in that, if one is, one has to be engaged, otherwise one will be useless. Because if you are engaged in anything material, what work you do today will get you your results for tomorrow. So if you don't work today, you won't get any results tomorrow. So if you don't work, then your existence won't last. So you must work. If you're trying to go back to Godhead, then you must serve Krishna. You must engage in Krishna's service. The residents of the spiritual realm engage in Krishna's service. They don't not engage in Krishna's service. But their engagement there is in their spiritual form. So therefore, then there's no problem. But here we don't have a spiritual form, so we use the material form to engage in Krishna's service. So then the work that we do here will look like material pious activities. It will look like the varna and ashram system. But it's actually not. It's simply taking those activities as a medium to serve Krishna. It will look like that. So we'll use the body, or we'll do the engage in the pancharatrik system of worship. We will perform artik and other activities because you must do something to show interaction, right? One living entity and another living entity, then they interact through the medium of the gross and subtle body. That's just how interaction is there. So if we have a spiritual body, then in a spiritual form, we can interact with the spiritual living entities and the spiritual Lord. But since we have a material body, then we must use that gross and subtle body in the Lord's service. It means you have to use a body to do service. So since we don't have a spiritual one manifest, so therefore we use the material one. It's a very simple formula like that. So therefore, the living entity has to be under one or the other of these potencies to act. So either it's in the material world or in the spiritual world. So that's been. So those who are mahatmas, then it's explained, they work, they display their natural constitutional position by working under the Lord's internal potency. Even if they're here, by engaging the gross and subtle body, even though it's material, in the Lord's service, that is constitutional. Because service is the constitutional position of the living entity. And service to Krishna, that is his natural position. Any questions on this? Or? No? Okay. Continuing. The word mahatma refers to those who are broad-minded, not cripple-minded. Crippled-minded persons always engage in satisfying their senses. Sometimes, crippled-minded persons always engage in satisfying their senses, sometimes expand their activities in order to do good for others through some ism, like nationalism, humanitarianism, or altruism. They may reject personal sense gratification for the sense gratification of others, like the members of their family, community, or society, either national or international. Actually, all this is extended sense gratification, from personal to communal to social. This may all be very good from the material point of view, but such activities have no spiritual value. The basis of such activity is sense gratification, either personal or extended. Only when a person gratifies the senses of the Supreme Lord can he be called a Mahatma or broad-minded person. So here is, we have to understand between, there's a difference between broad-minded and the modern definition of being liberal. Broad-minded means you have a proper standard that has come from God. And then you can accommodate, you know, properly yourself, the material energy, the Lord. It means very broad. You can bring in a lot of things. That's broad-minded. But you still have a fixed standard. Liberality then means that we change the standard. You know, this is their standard. So therefore it's okay. You know, but broad-minded doesn't mean that. Broad-minded, it's okay for them because it's their standard, but it doesn't mean it's actually okay. You know, so therefore one has to be able to distinguish between these two. So here, the crippled-minded, it seems that they're being broad-minded because then they are doing things for others. Means the materialist means that they're interested in sense gratification. So that's anamai. That's their level of consciousness. But sometimes they expand that up to pranamai, or life. So then they will appreciate others. So this will generally come in two categories. One is where there is in general life, and those that it's specific life. You know, save, you know, this particular life or that particular life. You know, save the blue whale or, you know, so something you want to say, the forest or this. And then others is just life in general. You appreciate life. So both of these aspects are there of pranamoya. So, but in any case, the bottom line of that is sense gratification. Either I'm enjoying or the other person's enjoying. But Mahatma means that Krishna is enjoying. Then whatever you're doing on any of these platforms, if Krishna is the benefactor of that, that's called Mahatma. But if Krishna is not, then here that is cripple-minded or Duratma. Like that. Yeah, Prabhupada says, maybe very good from the material point of view, but such activities have no spiritual value. So when we say something's good or not, means it has spiritual value. It may be good on the material point of view, but if it doesn't actually bring about Krishna's pleasure, then it doesn't have any spiritual value. So therefore it's temporary. In the above quoted verse from Bhagavad Gita, the words Daiva Prakriti refer to the control of the internal potency or pleasure potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This pleasure potency is manifested as Srimati Radharani, or her expansion Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. When individual jiva souls are under the control of the internal energy, their only engagement is the satisfaction of Krishna or Vishnu. This is the position of Mahatma. If one is not a Mahatma, he is a Duratma, or a crippled-minded person. Such mentally crippled Duratmas are put under the control of the Lord's external potency, Mahamaya. Indeed, all living entities within this material world are under the control of Mahamaya, whose business is to subject them to the influence of the threefold miseries. Adidaivika klesh, sufferings caused by the demigods, such as droughts, earthquakes, and storms. Adibhautika klesh, sufferings caused by other living entities like insects or enemies. And adiatma klesh, sufferings caused by one's own body and mind, such as mental and physical infirmities. Daiva bhutatma hetava, the conditioned soul subjected to these three miseries by the control of the external energy, suffer from various difficulties. The main problem confronting the conditioned souls is the repetition of birth, old age, disease, and death. In the material world, one has to work for the maintenance of the body and soul. But how can one perform such work in a way that is favorable for the execution of Krishna consciousness? Everyone requires possessions such as food grains, cloth, money, and other things necessary for the maintenance of the body. But one should not collect more than necessary for his actual basic needs. If this natural principle is followed, there will be no difficulty in maintaining the body. So within this world, then one's going to suffer. That is guaranteed. One can't ask why I'm not suffering. Many times we feel that by approaching a religious process, then all our anxieties should go away. So in one sense, yes, if you perform pious activities, then you will get pious results. But the problem is everything in this world is mixed, and we can't guarantee that, yes, okay, now I am performing good activities, but I can't guarantee that previously I didn't do bad activities. Like the person, he was a thief and a robber, you know, he did all kinds of nonsense and the law is looking for him. But now he's converted and he's a very nice guy. And he's, you know, down at the, you know, welfare society, you know, wheeling around old ladies, you know, at the old age home. But so he may feel, now I am doing nice, and everybody's dealing with him very nice. But then suddenly the police catch up with him, and he's put in jail, and he's thinking, what's, I was a nice guy, I was wheeling around the old ladies. You know, why am I being put in jail? So, but the old thing is, he's done those things before, and that has to be corrected. So, in the same way as we may take up the religious process, but we should not expect that, therefore, all material sufferings will go away, everything will be wonderful and nice and beautiful, and all relationships will be wonderful, and everyone will be doing everything, and so nice to me, and whatever I require, I'll get, and everybody will just come forward and give us everything, and it'll be so wonderful, won't it be great? Yes, and live happily ever after, and, you know, it's like, you know, you get, sometimes you get these little, you know, people come around your door, and they leave you these nice little magazines, and you always see, and it does, always the little girl, and she's embracing the tiger, and, you know, going all these out, and, you know, everybody's sitting around with their family in nice situations with all these animals and all this and that. Of course, they don't talk about the animals that they eat, but, you know, that's another thing. At least the ones in the picture are nice, you know. You know? Right? Because the lions are nice because they don't eat you, but the question doesn't come up, are you nice because you don't eat the others, like that. That's another thing. But whatever. You know, this idea of just everything just sentimentally so wonderful and perfect and completely, absolutely boring and, you know, completely nice like this. So if we come to Krishna consciousness, then we wonder, why is this happening? Why is it adiatma klesh, adidaivika klesh, adibhautika klesh, birth, death, old age, disease? It means I joined a religious movement that all this would go away. Then we may be disappointed. Because no one said it will go away here. What was said, it will go away by going to where is that place where these things don't exist. That was what was said. No one said, there's not a big sign out front, join Krishna consciousness and every last one of your material, your mortgage will go away, you know, the tax revenue will go away, your mother-in-law will go away, everything will go away. You know, nothing, there'll be no problems at all. You know, it doesn't say that out there. You know, when you join the temple president didn't give you a whole, this nice thing that would say all the different things, you know, that it would go away and everything like that. And then you just sign your soul away on the dotted line, like this. No. So we have to be very, very careful, is that we understand the material world will remain the material world. What will go away is our attachment to it, and therefore our disturbance caused by it. We're only disturbed if we're attached to it. If we're not attached to it, we're not disturbed. You know, we pick up the newspaper, there was an earthquake in Central Asia, 25,000 people were killed. We go, oh. And then turn to the funnies, you know, like that. But, you know, as long as, but if Perth had in the 25,000, then it's a big thing, and why the international community is not, you know, taking part in this, and what's going on here, and we're suffering, and then you care, because we're attached to it. But if we're not attached to it, anything can happen. Any number of people can be born, die, you know, get old, or get diseased, and it doesn't bother us at all. So it's simply attachment. So if we're not attached to our even our own situation, then nothing in our situation can bother us. That's what's being offered. But that's only a temporary offering. The real offering is going to the spiritual world, going from the external potency to the internal potency. And in the internal potency, then we don't have these problems. There's no need of these problems. Because you don't have that element of the tatastha where the living entity doesn't match the energy. The jiva being tatastha is still Satchidananda. And the internal potency is Satchidananda. And Krishna, who is the origin of all this and beyond this, is Satchidananda. There it matches. So therefore, the tatastha shakti just goes in and becomes under the control and the protection of the antaranga shakti. But in the material world, then the tatastha shakti still has to come here to make it work. Tatastha shakti has to make the material energy and the jiva match, because otherwise they don't match, because the material energy is not Satchidananda, it's the opposite. Right? It's temporary, dukkalayam ashashvatam, temporary and full of miseries. So therefore, still it has to function here. So then it's a difficulty. There'll always be a problem because the soul and the material energy don't match, while the soul and the spiritual energy do match. Like that. So here then what's pointed out is that So since we're here, the main problem is in this world everyone has to work. So you have to maintain the body and all these things. So you should find a way to do that that is favorable to Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada says we require food, grains, clothing, money and other things. But one should not collect more than necessary. So that's the thing. One should see how much is necessary, be satisfied with that and live at that level. And then at that level you'll be happy. Because if you collect beyond, then there's always anxieties. The more you have, the more anxiety. The less you have, the less anxiety. So you have to find out which platform you can live at that you can tolerate those anxieties. And that's your, minimum standard. But if it goes beyond that, then the anxieties will increase, and then your Krishna consciousness will decrease, because then you have to try to alleviate those anxieties. So those anxieties that you can tolerate, because they'll always be, and the minimum standard that you can be comfortable with, then that you do, and then you'll be able to give your balanced time to Krishna consciousness. Like that. Yeah. First thing, one is comfortable.
Go ahead and say. I was just going to say, it seems that a lot of the anxieties are reduced anyway, simply because out of knowledge, you understand why this is happening, So it doesn't, before it's sort of freaking out, why me, why this, why that, isn't it? My trauma, my problem, don't worry about it.
Yeah, the question comes is, why not you? Can you give a good reason why it shouldn't be you? Why should it be the other guy? That's knowledge then is, that's because the soul by nature wants knowledge. So if he doesn't know why things happen to him, it's a great disturbance. But if he knows why things happen to him, that right there, because it's addressed a need of the soul, then right there, then so much more satisfaction. It's a very important point. So, but it doesn't mean it'll go away. It reduces. Because you can't, it won't go away. It's the way the material world is. It's just, you can't change that. No one's trying. It means, generally we think of that by doing good works we'll change that. But within the material world you have good and you have bad. You can increase the good, but you can't get rid of the bad. You may reduce it down, but you can't get 100% no bad. That wouldn't be the definition of the material world. And the marginal energy then by nature is controlled by the modes. Therefore there will be destruction. So even the best situation will degrade. So that's like you have the Satya Yuga, but now it's Kali Yuga, it's degraded. And now it's pretty good. Later on it will be worse.
It seems that with knowledge you can be in more discomfort because of that. Whereas before, discomfort, you're trying to materially manipulate out of it somehow. That's my own fault. I'll bear it. And it'll go away in time. It's like a lot of those philosophies, is it tales that they say, it's good now, we'll get bad. It's bad now, we'll get good.
That's the whole thing. Whatever it is, if it's bad, say, don't worry, it'll get good. And if it's good, say, be careful because it'll get bad. It just teaches you, it's niti. It just teaches you how the material world works. So niti means your practical experience. So as people get older, then they learn that everybody has the same problems, so therefore you just live with it. You know, the young child is intolerant because they don't have that experience. But the elders, they don't like it any more than the kid, but they tolerate it because they know. So that's one, is material experience. And then on top of that, if you have the spiritual, then you can reduce it way, way down. Way down. It's a very good point.
Because we are not in Vedic culture, it is even easier for them.
Yeah.
Because karma is just right from the point of childhood.
Yeah.
We have heard their parents, their others,
because
karma is there.
Yeah. It's because knowledge has to be applied in the culture. So naturally, it means in your Western scenario, you have philosophy and you have culture, and they're two different things. Like even you say culture in the modern society, and they'll think of two things. They'll think of either, drama, dance, music, art, or they'll think of, that stuff you put into milk and it creates yogurt. Right? Like that. But it's never said to be a lifestyle. It means you can. If you discuss it, then they can acknowledge it like that. But it's never thought to be the philosophy applied in your life becomes the culture. You should become humble. Why? Because the philosophy is there. That's the principle of knowledge. We must know we are servant of the Lord. Our position is as servant. So that's the natural principle of service, is humility. So therefore, in the culture, you should be humble because it's the nature of the soul. So if that permeates everything you do, you're humble in all spheres, then it makes the whole thing work. So that's so for the children, they're young, they won't know the philosophy and they don't care. But it's ideal the adults do know, so that when they get of age, they can explain it to them. Because much of the time we see is that the culture becomes lost if it can't become explained. Is that the children go up, neither the parents nor the priests can explain why they have to do this. So if it's explained, then naturally they've had a lifetime of training and practice, they'll naturally continue doing it if it's logical to them. But if it can't be explained, then sometimes we see, then they have a tendency to give up. That's very much. So in all these, religious and moral backgrounds, the children may have been trained nicely by their parents, but since they're not getting answers, then they're giving up their natural, religion and culture and lifestyle. And, giving it up for nothing, basically. They don't have an alternative. So that's why both are necessary. But the philosophy becomes useful when it's applied. So when it's applied, that's the culture. So that's a very good point. That is the advantage of... We may or may not have appreciated that, but at least then the children can grow up in that. They can get the benefit. So then they can learn all these things. And that's very good. And Prabhupada always said is that those born in India, then automatically so much that they, without having to study or that, they know. They know karma, they know about God, they know about duties, they know about, so many aspects of cleanliness, self-control. It's just automatic in the culture. Yes.
So you're speaking of acting three ways, piously, impiously, or the devotion Christian. My question is, I was speaking to my Mormon friend a while back, and I was trying to explain to him what is spiritual. And they have a different concept of what's spiritual. He was saying that he was holding his sister's newborn baby, and that was a spiritual experience. And they had a real sense of community, and they feel that that's spiritual, that they all cooperate together and say a prayer before and after they do things or whatever. And there's something there, but how do you really convince them that what is actually spiritual?
Maybe difficult. See, it's because they don't differentiate this. To them, the soul is the body. So that makes a problem. You know, of course, then it creates all kinds of problems that they can't properly address. It's just like, okay, you go to heaven. What age you'll be there in the spirit, in heaven? So they come up with things, okay, you'll be the age when you take up, you know, being religious. You know, what if you did that at 5? You want to be a 5-year-old the rest of your life? What if you did it when you're 90? You know, and be a 90. So that's their whole idea, you should take up young. But what's the age? How is that determined? You know, it's just, you know, what happens that you're buried and all that. But, you know, so far, you know, we haven't had the resurrection day. And, you know, some of those people have been buried for a few thousand years. You know, can we guarantee their body's in great shape? You know? And also, can they define, do you need a spleen and a liver and a heart and a stomach in heaven? Or it's all right that they removed it when they embalmed you? You know, it's just, you know, you don't need that. You don't need a brain, right, in heaven? Or, you know, it's just, you know, they've removed all this and that you don't need blood either, so... You know, but then they've only started that recently. What about before? You know, I mean, what's going to happen to Paul and Peter and, you know, and Matthew? You know, because they didn't embalm them. You know, so these kind of they don't really have answers for. You know, some of the theologians may discuss it, but they don't have. So they have some inherent problems because they don't go deep enough into their philosophy. That's one thing.
They like to overlook these things and just...
They have to overlook, otherwise they'll go crazy.
Then they get this reassurance by this community spirit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's that. So then, what you're dealing with, this is basically the scenario. In you have 5 levels of consciousness. The first is anamoy, which means the senses, sensual. The second is pranamoy, which is basically an extended form of that. Which is extended sense gratification. It's like, you know, morality and, you know, all these isms like that. The third stage is manamoy. That is the platform of, you know, proper religious social interaction. You know, like that. Philosophies are on that level. Your varnashram is actual manamoy. These others technically aren't. But they're put in that category just for academic sake. You know, so your modern religions and this and that, they would go into there. Then above that is actual knowledge of the soul. That's vijnanamoya. That's the 4th level. We understand the soul is different from the body and its spirit. The 5th level is ananamoya, where you understand the soul in connection with its relationship with God. That eternal relationship of service. You know, service. So basically what happens in the material world is, so on the Vedic standard, is anamoy and pranamoy are considered just materialistic. Then manamoy, or the social platform, that's considered moral. Then your vijnanamoy and anandamoy are considered spiritual. Like that. And of the two, then one is temporary and one is eternal. Like that. So now, on the material, in the modern world religious scenario, anamoy is considered materialism. Pranamoy is considered moral. And manamoy is considered religious or spiritual. Like that. So they're taking the experience of what we would call just proper religious moral life, that experience, that rasa, because there's 3 rasas, means you have material, sensual, emotional, and transcendental. So they're taking this one that's on the 3rd level, manamoy, of the religious experience, For us, that's the emotional platform. So they're experiencing that. And because that's such a great, it's such a great difference between that and sensual rasa, therefore they think it's spiritual. Like that. So for us, we just call that our normal day-to-day platform of interaction. And then for us, spiritual is beyond that. So how you deal with your wife and kids and, you know, you're the postman and the neighbor's dog and all that, that is on that platform of emotional. So what they are claiming to be spiritual, for us, we call just normal worldly dealings. That's in our tradition. Unfortunately, devotees kind of have a stubbornness to stick to anamoy as their social and position. So therefore, it's very hard for them to come up to that. So then they don't feel that community spirit, because it's only felt on the emotional platform. And the emotions are only felt if religious activities are performed. You don't feel emotions from non-religious activities. We call them emotions, but those aren't emotions. They're different. The physical ones generated from the body due to the hormones and other chemicals in the body, those aren't what we're talking about. We're talking beyond that. And those come up on, you know, these others. You know, fear, lust, all these different things. Then we get, you know, some gut reaction. But those are created by the chemicals in the body. So we call those emotions. But we don't find those to be of high grade. So people nowadays are conditioned that that's all there is. They don't even know that there's something just on, you know, interacting with somebody else in a nice, proper way, that it might be something nice. You know, it's just they haven't experienced in their life. You don't see it on the television. You know, sometimes there is a little bit on some soap opera or this or that when it's not doing some, you know, for a few moments, you know, the ladies get together, the grandmother and the son, they get together, and then it's a moment of niceness before, you know, they put on the organ, and then somebody has to look funny because something went wrong, you know, like that. So, you know, so therefore, that they don't even know it's there. So that's why they become bewildered and think it's a spiritual experience. Religious is not spiritual. Religious experience means emotional. Spiritual is the soul. It's a different level. So they equate religion and spiritual, but we don't. For us, religion means varnashram. It's not spiritual. It's emotional. And sensual is sensual. That everybody will agree with. But it's just that they take emotional as spiritual. We take emotional as material. You know, religious is material, but it's the best of the material, like that. Then you go into the realm of the spiritual. So that is the difficulty. It's just what we're talking about is beyond that. You know, holding the baby or community, that's nice. But then there's communing with God. That's something different, you know. So that therefore all their saints and all that in their religion, they were tasting something else. You know, you didn't, you know, find them talking about, you know, the best experience in their life is holding their sister's baby. You know, they're talking about something else, you know. And if they don't know, then maybe you should read up on some of these things, you know. You know, they're talking about, you know, communing with God. You know, so it's something else. But then communing with God is on God's terms, not on our terms. Just like we talk with the president or the prime minister, whatever you have in this country, on his terms, not on our terms. You know, we can't sit here and say, you know, where's the guy? Let him come out here in the street in front of my house. You know, I'll give him a piece of my life. It doesn't happen. You want to see him, it's on his terms. You know, you make an appointment and you fulfill all the, you know, requirements, then you see him. You know? And only if you do something very extraordinary, then you might see him in front of your house. You know, but that's because he wants to see you. But otherwise, the thing is they're not understanding this difference in the three kinds of rasas. They only know of two. And so they take one as material, one as spiritual. when we take, one is sensual, one is as emotional, and one is spiritual. Like that. So it's just the information is not great enough. It's not their fault. It's been purposely lost for them. Like that. You know, the teachings that were given originally and the teachings that they have now are different. Because these other teachings, I don't know why they feel that they would be very, very good for people. You know, if the church let out that original teachings had all these things of, you know, the soul and reincarnation and all these things, you know, they might be considered quite trendy, you know. Unfortunately, you know, they're on the verge of, you know, dying, right?
Is it true that in the spiritual world you don't have a Paramatma feature
anymore? No. Paramatma feature, Brahman feature, these are concepts of the material world. You know, these are means they're not material concepts, but they're concepts that are only necessary or understood here. Spiritual world you don't need. Krishna means in the spiritual world one's always with Krishna. But when you come here alone, so Krishna comes with you. Therefore there's Paramatma. You know? In between the spiritual world and material world is Brahman. So then therefore there's the Brahman understanding. Like that. These are the pieces that you are enjoying, or you merge in Brahman, or you merge into the Lord. So these are the positions of the material world. You know. But in the spiritual world, then there's no need of these. Because the Brahman is sitting in front of you in the form of the Lord. You know. Is that okay?
Plus, I mentioned that we don't get attached to all these material things. We have them, but we don't get attached to it. What about spiritual things like guru and the Lord?
Yeah, that we can get it. No, that attachment to things that are spiritual is not a problem. As long as we understand properly what we're getting attached to. You know? But even if not, you know, that's always good. That's not a problem.
Will Krishna take away our attachment to spiritual things also and get attached to
him? It depends upon how we're attached to those spiritual things. Like I remember one devotee, he was very attached to doing Tulsi Puja. Because he found every time that he did Tulsi Puja, he had a really good bowel movement. So he would always make sure that he means even if other people wanted to do Tulsi Puja, he wouldn't allow. He was there first. So that attachment then may need some adjustment. So it depends upon your attachment. I said, okay, then the moon. Your choice. Moon or China?
So the moral is that in the end, Prabhupada asked him to go to China, and my woman felt relieved that eventually
that wasn't the moon, right?
So he took away everything from him, and his explanation was that even like this is an attachment.
That, because you're attached to the specifics of the thing, the externalities of it. See, there's the service, and then there's specifics of the service. But those are So you have to be careful about your attached to something because it's akin to your conditioned nature. So your conditioned nature is going to like doing certain services. So then if you're attached to the services just because of that, that attachment may have to be removed. But the principle of it, that your attachment to serving Krishna, that remains. So you shouldn't be attached to serving Krishna in any particular way, but you should be attached to serving Krishna. So, but it's favorable to do those activities that are akin to your conditioned nature. That is there. But in the beginning, if we're attached to them, that's called sakam. But if we can give that up, and we're more comfortable doing those because it's the nature, we have that conditioned nature, that's called nishkam. We still prefer to do those activities that are akin to the conditioned nature, but we're not attached because the results of it are not for us. The results are for Krishna. Well, the sakam means the results are for us. But eventually even that may or may not have to be given up. Because eventually one has to give up the body and, you know, all the situations in which. So the principle has to be we're attached to Krishna. Otherwise then we'll be attached to that service.
Guru,
that's fine. We don't see any instances where someone has to give up their attachment to Guru. There's no pastimes or examples of that.
Or give up attachment to Guru and not to Krishna?
Because they know Guru. Krishna you learn through Krishna you learn through the Guru. So by that attachment you'll get to the other attachment. You know, but you have to know that the goal is that. Otherwise being attached, you're not really attached to Guru if you don't want to know Krishna. Because the Guru is trying to teach you Krishna.
Alright, so when we analyze the state of society as it is now, it always comes down to the fact that we're the only ones who know what's going on, you know, according to Prabhupada's books. So then the impetus is sort of upon us to spread knowledge. How can one know that they've, how can someone know that they've done enough, you know, because it seems like they could always do more, you know. But how can one be peaceful that at least they're doing their, what they can do, or like that? What, is there any sort of guideline when you can feel satisfied doing enough preaching, satisfied that requirement, or should one always feel any anxiety like that?
It depends also on your position. You know, what you're taking as your occupation. If preaching is your service, then there'll naturally be an anxiety to try to improve that quality or increase that. You know, if it's part of what you're doing, then naturally, you know, you fit in what you can. But the best thing is then to, you know, work in conjunction with authorities, and then it makes it more clear. One doesn't have such opportunity, then one you know, tries to do one's best. One sees that he's doing the best he can. But one should always understand is that this knowledge and this mission, it's not coming from us. So it's not that we know and nobody else knows. Krishna knows and the Acharyas know, and others may be ignorant. And by their grace we have come to know also. So we are carrying their message. It's not our message. So we're not actually the ones in the know. You know, we're the carriers of the message of those who know. Then it keeps us humble. Then we can be bold preachers, but remain humble. So that contradiction is not a problem, because it's not our, if it's our knowledge, yes, then being bold would be arrogant. But it's not our knowledge. It's coming from others. The Acharyas, Krishna, they're saying. So therefore we can boldly preach their message. Like that. At the same time remain humble, because we know it's theirs, it's not ours. So In other words, then you have to see from the guru, sadhu, and shastra, you know, if you're doing what you can, or if you could do more. We see Prabhupada was always an anxiety to do more. How to catch everybody, how to make a plan. So if you can make plans and you can do that, then you do. If you can't, then you find others who do have and try to assist them. And then do your best. And you'll be in anxiety, is, am I doing my best to help them? You know. And if you're leading, then are the best ideas coming up? Are the best, most efficient plans in place? You know, how to catch people we haven't caught. That makes sense. So anxiety tends to be there. But if it's anxiety in connection to Krishna, it's nice. It's different from the anxiety of, you know, material life. Okay. Prabhupada talks about it. So what Prabhupada discusses, what he says are proper, you know, proper relationships and all. They're just like here, we just read before, is about the relationship, you know, of you know, what is food, what's it for, you know, that it's connected to Krishna, the stomach, you know, how much we eat is connected to Krishna. Sex life, that's connected to Krishna. We do those things. We correct, and then he mentions about we have to maintain. We shouldn't collect more than necessary. You know, so then that's there, because people will say security, but what's security? You know, I mean, security means the what is it? So the Sultan of Brunei will not die. Right. Right, he's the richest man in the world, so definitely he won't die. Right, he won't. There's not going to be no birth, no death, no old age and disease in his house. Right, because he's the richest guy. And I'm sure, you know, probably we could say Bill Gates is probably rich enough that he won't have any of these problems either. Right, you know, and you know, the Queen of England. I think she's the most wealthy woman in the world, but somehow it didn't help her mother. You know, but you know what to do. You know, it means to, you know, maybe she didn't get her application in early enough, or I don't know. You know, something happened, or she had her money in the wrong bank. I don't know. Something happened. There's some technical detail of why the Queen Mother died, but you know, I'm sure she'll work it out. You know, before she dies. Right? But the point is it doesn't. It's not a matter of how much you have that makes security. You always. That's why in the Gita. There's that verse, I think it's in the second chapter, says one should be free from the desire for gain and safety. These are the two terms, gain and safety. You know, we just use, instead of safety, we use security. That's all. It's a, you know, it's the same thing. And gain is just, you know, being practical and, you know, practical necessities of life. And so, but here, Prabhupada's saying not more. He's not saying don't try to create, but not more than what you need, because nothing here is safe. It means the six symptoms of surrender. But one of them is that you are dependent upon Krishna. That Krishna is our protection. He is our safety. You know, what else is going to save us? Money will save us. Has money saved anybody? You know, has family ever saved anybody? You know, has a house ever saved anybody? Or a car? Nice clothes? Jewelry? You know, good scent? You know, babies? You know, nice pots in the kitchen? I mean, what has saved anybody? If we look at it practically, what has saved? Okay, fine, you want your safety, right? Great, what is it? Define it. You know, well, in case in the future things get right. Yeah, but what happens? Okay, you have $10,000 in the bank. What happens if you need $100,000? What if you have 100,000 at night? What if it costs you a million? So, like that, what is this definition? It's illusory. It doesn't exist. You know? So, therefore, Prabhupada says here, everybody requires, this is quote, everyone requires possessions such as food, grains, clothing, money, and other things necessary for the maintenance of the body. But one should not collect more than necessary for his actual basic needs. If his natural principle is followed, there will be no difficulty in maintaining the body. So then here is that anamoy means sensual, and then manamoy means emotional. In between the two, you have pranamoy. So pranamoy is extended sense gratification, but to make it work, then there must be some regulation. Means justice, morality, basic, your justice, your basic kind of like morality, and they say economics. These all fall into that category. Anything where people work together for sense gratification. You know, it's like you have this fence. So that fence is that what's on this side is mine, and what's on that, I enjoy this, and what's on that side is yours, you enjoy that. I don't bother your side of the fence, you don't bother my side of the fence. You know, so that's pranamoy. Like that, you know, you give your taxes and it pays for the road and all these things. These are all like pranamoy things. They're facilities that are created like that. That the government does that, that's their duty. That's on another level. That's manamoy. But, so manamoy is what is your religious duties towards others. Like that. Your position, who you are, and then what is what others' position is, and then what is your duty towards them. You know? And then naturally, then you'd naturally know what is their duties towards you, so you don't expect something from them that they don't, aren't supposed to give. You know? Like, you know, it was never in the contract that your, you know, parents shouldn't die. So therefore, when the child gets really bent out of shape at how their, you know, father, you know, let them down by dying, you know, so they get bent out of shape for the rest of their life. You know, their father let them down. And so it's not a proper religious understanding, because there was nothing there that he wouldn't die. You know, like that. So the religious platform is then the social rules and regulations, how to interact. And if those are understood and followed, so I'm saying these are it. Prabhupada's given them. That's how we got into that. Is that you need possessions, you know, but how you deal with those possessions, that makes it religious or irreligious. You know? Say, I need all these things. But do you need all these things? If needing all those things makes you work so much that you're not Krishna conscious, maybe you don't need all those things. Like that. Because then you have all those things. Okay, you have the washing machine, you have the grinder, you have the mixer, you have the vacuum cleaner and all that. What do you do with your spare time? Right? Well, that then, you know, I go down to the gym, I go out and do this, I go out and do that. Well, maybe, but you have to pay to go to the gym, and you're only going to the gym and have to do other things because you don't do any work in your house. So therefore, and then to pay for all that, you're having to work so hard that you're not going to the temple. So maybe you don't need all that. Maybe it'd be better you made less money, you know, didn't work so hard, made less money, you know, and maybe, you know, did some work in your house. Then maybe you wouldn't have to go to the spa to maintain your health. So you'd save money from both sides. You wouldn't save time, because the time that you save in the house, you're going to spend it somewhere else anyway. So there's no such thing as time saving. That's just the businessman's, you know, newspeak to get you to buy his stuff. You don't spend any time, you know, because, you know, your mixer works. You just put it in there and go like this, you know, so you saved, you know, 3 minutes. But it costs more than 3 minutes of your life to buy it. You know, in the machine and in the electricity. You know? So like that. so like that, is that we too easily buy into the, you know, modern ideas. You know, it doesn't mean we don't live in this world, but it doesn't mean that we have to fall victim to this world. So therefore, we have to find what is the balance for us. If you're working 8 hours a day creates huge amounts of money, then if you live in a more comfortable lifestyle, it's natural for you. But if it doesn't produce, then by working 12 hours a day, that's not considered religious. Because then 4 hours goes from your Krishna conscious life, or from your duties to your house, to your family. You know, you can't say you're working 12 hours a day and giving proper attention to your family members or to your sadhana. It would be very hard to defend that position.
But
according to what's your priority, what's Krishna consciousness. So those things, then how are you going to decide what is your priority, how you should spend your time, when you should spend your time, you know, how you should make your money, how you should spend your money. So that is where religion comes in, because religion then tells you that. How you're going to make your money, how you're going to spend it, how you're going to deal, how you're going to have all these things. Like that. If you don't work it on that, then it's on the pranamoy level. Or on the anamoy level. You've made it up yourself. But if it's based on what God says, then that is religious. Like that. In other words, it's a very simple thing. What is the nature of something? That's religion. So everything has its nature. You know, it's just like he was saying, his Mormon friend is getting a religious experience because he holds the baby in the way that a baby has to be held. If he grabbed it just by one toe and he's holding on to it and waving it around, he might not get the religious experience he was talking about. You know, because it's irreligious, it's against the religion of the baby. You know, so when you combine your hands and the baby, you have to do it in a certain way. If you put your hands on top of the baby and lift them up, the baby doesn't come with it. Right? So that's irreligious. You put your hands under the baby and lift up and it comes. You know, but then also you have to balance it. If you just put it one hand under the knees and one hand under the feet and lift, then you also don't lift. So you have to get the proper... So it's a science. Religion is a science. So you have to know what is a baby, where their weight is, you know. So if somebody doesn't know this, then religion would look something like this. Okay, take your right hand and putting it straight in front of you, and then the left, and don't cross your hands like this. Very important, don't cross your hands. Then depending upon the size of the baby, then you're looking for the point of balance of the baby. Then depending upon that, you want to give some support to the back and some support, you know, to the, you know, the thighs and like that. Then you will spread your hands at a distance depending upon the size of the baby. Right? But when you put your hands under the baby, don't do it too fast, because it might create some abrasions on the back of the baby. You know, it means this is, and then we hear this, we laugh. But if somebody doesn't know, this is what you have to say. So since we don't know what religion is, then when religion says, the scriptures say, this is how you're going to deal with a husband or a wife or a child, then we say, all this ritual. Then you can understand this is just abject foolishness. If you knew, you'd do it. Like Bhakti Vihara was saying. He has learned that since he was a kid. We're talking all this, you know, philosophical, technical stuff, and he's just going, this is so obvious. I've known this since I was, you know, a little kid. You know, for us, we don't know. So it has to be explained. And in a scientific way. So therefore, that's what religion is. In the spiritual world, you don't have to have books that tell you how to do it, because it springs spontaneously from the heart. Here, there's nothing spontaneous except, you know, sense gratification. And even that, it's only what you have the piety or impiety to perform. You know? Like that. So you have to be taught what is an object and how you deal with that object. So therefore, it seems like so many rules and regulations. That's why sadhana bhakti is there. Is you practice it. By practicing it, then it becomes natural for you. Then that practice becomes secondary for the more primary things of remembering Krishna. like that. So in the beginning, therefore, the vaidhi is prominent because you have to learn how to deal with it. And once you know how to deal with it, then you put into the aspect of the spontaneous aspect of remembering Krishna and doing it for Krishna. It's just the automatics. That's what Prabhupada says, automatic. If you understand it, it's automatic. If you don't understand it, then you can come up with so many ideas. Then we end up with, you know, the one that's here. Four, practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement. It means you're just doing it because you're supposed to, you don't know why or how to connect it. Or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. Bingo. That's the Western mindset. Is that either do it because you're a fanatic, you know, it can't explain it, or throw it out the window. So this is why Rupa Goswami has mentioned this right in the second verse. Because this is what the neophyte tends to do. He either takes the rule, and because he's a Prakriti Bhakta, he only sees the externals, he takes the externals, and that is religion. So he's very religious, that's good. And then the other person can't relate to that, throws it all out. They're irreligious. Of the two, better to be religious, but they're both bogus. The real thing is connected to Krishna. Unless it's connected to Krishna, then it has some life, then it has meaning. So the religion probably gives so much religion, but it's not given in a way that it is separately defined. It's defined only in relationship to Krishna. Therefore, then we take it as philosophy and not as religion. Because but it's sad dharma or eternal religion. It means that religion which is connected to the Supreme Lord. And because then if we take it as philosophy, philosophy is theoretical, it's not practical. Therefore, when I want to get into practical life, that's something else. My Krishna conscious life is one thing, and my practical, you know, real life is something totally different. But that's what Prabhupada is trying to save us from, is that our devotional life and our practical life are synonymous. Even though it doesn't look like you're sitting in the office with a bunch of, you know, non-devotees, you know, it doesn't seem highly religious. But if the purpose of doing that and the method how you go about doing that is according to the scriptures, then it's religious. And if you've connected it to Krishna, then it becomes sadharma. So that is what is being offered. So Prabhupada blends it in so nicely, because otherwise in the tendency we'll just catch the separate thing, just get into the whole emotional trip and completely forget the philosophy. You know, because Christianity used to have some philosophy. I mean, at least you still have a few theologians that, you know, have libraries full of books that they read on philosophy. But other than them, probably none of the others know that philosophy exists. You know, what's your philosophy? Well, you know, be a good person and, you know, be nice and do your duties and, you know, like that. Great. You know, but philosophy should be a little deeper than that. So Prabhupada's blended it, so he's given it here that we can follow. But the problem is we have a tendency to overlook it. You know, either by ignorance or by our own avowed, you know, personal philosophies or understandings. Like that. Is that okay?
Just a question about preaching. When you're preaching to people, devotees or whatever, is it better to preach in a way where they want it rather than you want to preach to them?
Means it should be you preach to the audience. So if they don't like what you're saying, means you're not addressing them as an audience. So that's the thing. It means, of course, truth has to be spoken, but at the same time, as you try to find a way in which they will accept it, that's good. That's best.
So maybe preaching in a way where
the audience will appreciate it. Yeah, like that. You have to speak to it. That's a good. That then that means the teaching method is good. No, that's another thing. Then the trick is to get them to want to know. You have to create interests like that. You know, like that. So you try to create that. And it's good. Okay, this should be last. Then we should. Which means if it's going to be answered in 2 minutes, then it's okay. If it's longer than that, then we should wait.
No, it's okay,
Maharaj. Sure. So we can ask him while you have. Maybe we can ask him on.
Which one? The morning? Or you? Tomorrow's what day?
Thursday,
yeah, should be. Shri Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinda ki, Jayate Gaura Premana.